Thanks for coming. My name is Kevin Ryan, and I'm here to talk about the official conspiracy theory of September 11th, in particular part two of that theory, the NIST World Trade Center report. I think it's important to go through the detail. This will be a lecture that's very detailed and unfortunately a little bit dry sometimes, but I think it's really important to expose the falsehoods directly, point by point, that have been given to us. As an introduction, I am, again, Kevin Ryan. I'm a former manager at Underwriters Laboratories. I was actually the top manager at UL's water testing division. So I'm not an engineer, I'm a chemist. But I got involved with this because of communications made to me both verbally and in writing about UL's involvement in testing the materials related to the World Trade Center buildings. An NIST is a government agency. They report through the Department of Commerce to Carlos Gutierrez, who is a member of the Bush administration. And their director is also a presidential appointee. So that means that this report actually is a product of the Bush administration. And it's what some people would call Bush science. If you don't know what NIST is, it's the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Let's talk about Bush science a little bit. There's been a lot of criticism of... It's not Bush League science. It's actually worse than that. It's Bush science. So, in an open letter from 60 prominent scientists, including 20 Nobel laureates, they said the Bush administration had been deliberately and systematically distorting scientific fact in the service of policy goals. The Union of Concerned Scientists said that they found a serious pattern of undermining science by the Bush administration. And finally, the House Committee on Government Reform said they found numerous instances where the administration had manipulated the scientific process and distorted or suppressed scientific findings. So keep that in mind as we go forward. Also, a few things to keep in mind. We're going to start with a little bit of history before we get to the NIST report, and we're going to talk about the preliminary reports that came before that. But a few things really we need to keep in mind is no tall buildings have ever collapsed from fire, but on 9/11, we're told there were three. And what David Ray Griffin has called a reverse truth, no building exhibiting all the characteristics of controlled demolition has ever not been a controlled demolition. Additionally, 99.7% of the steel evidence was destroyed despite outraged cries from the public and fire experts. And finally, more than a year passed before a full investigation. The NIST was the first full investigation done. There's an elephant in the room, by the way, if you don't know. And it's not Stephen Jones. It's actually a friend of his, an elephant called... Elephant called Demo. This is not a political discussion, actually. Demo remembers some things that we don't oftentimes remember, and that is there were a number of experts. These are just two out of quite a few that pointed out that the collapse of these buildings looked very much like a controlled demolition, including Mike Taylor of the National Association of Demolition Contractors. And an interesting person, Ronald Hamburger, who ended up being a contributor to both the FEMA and NIST reports. He said it appeared to him that charges had been placed in the building. A very important thing to remember is none of the official investigations ever really examined the demolition hypothesis. I don't think any of them ever thought to even consider the demolition hypothesis. So a little bit of history. There was some early support for the official story from so-called experts who said that jet fuel fires had melted the steel. Recently, it's been said that those crazy conspiracy theorists always talked about the jet fuel fires melting the steel. That's somewhat true in the fact that the official conspiracy theory was supported by these people. The BBC, Scientific American, Nova Video, a couple of professors from major universities, all told us that the jet fuel fires melted the steel. Some other major media sources talked about temperatures which were very high, and as far as I know, none of these people have apologized to us. But just to get this out of the way, steel melts at approximately 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. We'll stick with the unit Fahrenheit throughout this lecture. Jet fuel fires burn the maximum of approximately 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit unless in a special combustion chamber, and even at that, just a few hundred degrees higher than that. It's important to remember that gas temperatures are not steel temperatures. Steel temperatures in a fire actually lag behind in time and in magnitude of the temperature from gas temperatures. And thermodynamic calculations, which, by the way, as far as I know, none of the official investigations ever did, but I've done and other people have done, show that the steel temperatures in the impact zones could have reached a maximum of 600 degrees Fahrenheit. So where are the real experts? There really are no experts because these are unique events. There's a long string of unique events on September 11th. Our nation's air defenses actually don't stand down. Terrorists don't come back to life after stealing our freedoms. And tall buildings do not collapse from fire. That's the history. Because these are unique events, there are no experts to tell us about these things. And there are certainly no experts to tell us why all of these things could have happened on the same day. But there is always an official explanation for terrorism, it turns out. I went to Chris Emery's lecture yesterday. It was very good. And you may know there are a lot of disturbing questions about the Oklahoma City bombing. Reports about multiple explosions, eyewitness accounts of undetonated bombs in the buildings, FBI confiscating the videos and not releasing them, and experts saying that could not have been done without demolition. But the official story stuck with one guy and one truck bomb, and they found a small group of engineers to support that story with a report. Yeah, let's get to that. We'll get to that. Go ahead. There were four official investigations, or so-called investigations, into the collapse of the World Trade Center. The first was the American Society of Civil Engineers, which evolved into the FEMA Building Performance Assessment Team. Their report was released in May of 2002, and another very interesting report, which I think people should keep in mind, is the Silverstein-Weidlinger report, which was released in October of 2002, and we'll talk more about that. Finally, the NIST report, which we will go through in painful detail shortly. Okay. Here's an amazing fact that apparently Chris Emery wasn't aware of. The initial American Society of Civil Engineers team sent to the site to tell us what happened at the World Trade Center and the Pentagon matched person for person with the engineering group that gave us the false report about Oklahoma City. Gene Corley, Charles Thornton, Paul Mikar, and Mete Sozin were all the four engineers who gave us the engineering report about what happened in Oklahoma City. They were also the four of the eight initial people that were sent to the World Trade Center and the Pentagon to tell us what happened there.
Now, the engineering
team? I'll take questions afterward if you don't mind. In any case, the only things these events have in common are terrorism. One's a concrete building, the other's a steel building, one's a bombing, the other's a fire. So, you know, the ASCE says there's 1.5 million engineers in the country. You would think there would be a few more available to tell us what happened on terrorism. Okay? And they started with predetermined conclusions, for sure. Gene Corley knew that once the jets hit the building, that the World Trade Center would collapse as it did. He just didn't know when it was going to happen, he said. Charles Thornton, again from the Oklahoma City report, saying, we all know what caused the collapse very early on. And Shankar Nair, who was an NIST contributor, said that already there is near consensus as to the sequence of events that led to the collapse of the World Trade Center. So these guys apparently knew exactly what happened, and I don't doubt it. The first official leaders were, in fact, Gene Corley, in charge of the investigation, and New York City granted authority to the engineering firm Thornton and Tomasetti, Richard Tomasetti, to be in charge of the site. It was Richard Tomasetti who cleared the decision to recycle the steel, later saying had he known the direction that the investigations into the disaster would take, he would have adopted a different stance. But I'm not sure what he thought it was going to go for. There's a crime scene, right? So this is evidence. And the question for me now is does anyone smell a rat? Yeah, the rat's going to continue on here. There were a lot of restrictions on the ASCE investigation. They were allowed no access to blueprints. They were not allowed to ask for help from the public. The team members were threatened with dismissal for speaking to the press. They had no access to the steel until the first week of October, and it appeared that FEMA was obstructing their investigation. Well, one way to solve that is just to allow FEMA to take over the investigation. And that's what they did. The investigation expanded and was named the FEMA BPAT after about a month. A couple of interesting characters who were added at that time were John Gross from NIST, who has a history of oil and gas work, Teresa McAllister from Greenhorn and O'Meara, a major Department of Defense contractor, and several other government contractors, and all these people kind of followed along throughout all the investigations. It was amazingly consistent, the people who were actually involved in all these different reports. When FEMA took over, approximately $1 million was allocated from different sources, but only $100,000 was spent by December. And at the same time, the president was telling us it costs a lot to fight this war in his State of the Union address. We're paying $1 billion a month for it. So we had spent, by the end of the year, 30,000 times more on the wars than we had spent on finding out why we were fighting the wars. By January, it was called a half-baked farce. Bill Manning of the Fire Engineering magazine has a famous comment. It's a half-baked farce. Dick Cheney had called the Senate leader Tom Daschle and asked him to limit the scope and overall review of what happened. And President Bush went to Tom Daschle's office to reinforce that message. Meanwhile, a Berkeley professor working on a National Science Foundation study had got himself access to the steel. Incredible. He was nice to the people at the scrapyard, and they let him see the steel. And, of course, he was working on a National Science Foundation study. He said the impact did nothing to this building. So now we know the column did not fail. It was a failure of the floor in most cases. So he was very impressed by how little damage the planes had done to the columns in particular. And he, I think, kind of assumed that that meant that the floors had failed. There were some comments made around that time that made you think that the engineers who had designed the buildings would design them for airplane impacts, but for no jet fuel fires. Now, that's kind of crazy. I don't know how the planes would get to the buildings without jet fuel. But Eduardo Causel, who contributed to the NIST report, and my old boss's boss, Loring Knobloch, the CEO of Underwriters Laboratory, both of them said similar things. So who would do this? Who would design these buildings for aircraft impacts but no jet fuel fires? Well, the answer is not the World Trade Center's design engineer. These towers were designed by a man named John Skilling. And Skilling had this to say in 1993 when asked if he considered the plane crashes in his design. This is 5 years before his death after the first bombing of the World Trade Center. He said, "Our analysis indicated the biggest problem would be the fact that all the fuel would dump into the building." And he went on, "But the building structure would still be there." So the guy who designed the buildings said the building structure would still be there. Okay. He had a lot of confidence in his design. These are some pictures from the construction of these buildings. On the left, you can see the towers going up. And actually, the core, which is essentially a self-standing core, went up first, and then the perimeter of the building went up around that. The core columns here, this is a cross-section of a mid-level core column, were these super massive columns. They were typical construction-grade steel, but they were just huge. and they went up 47 columns in the middle, and around them were these super strong columns because they were made of super strong steel, 65,000 PSI to 100,000 PSI steel, really strong steel. And all these columns were strapped together by what are called spandrels. So they formed a web, this super strong web of steel. And a lot of people talked about the reason that the planes could hit the buildings and not cause a problem, because it was this web, and the forces would just go around the hole. It would just be directed around the hole by the columns and the spandrels. And that is what happened. So, but what about the fire? And the question is, where is the fire? On the left, you see the Madrid Windsor Building in February of 2005. There was a similar fire in Venezuela in 2004. And these fires burned 20 times longer. They burned like torches. And neither of them, and many others, have never suffered global collapse. Whereas the Twin Towers really had relatively small fires in them. Now, this is seen from a distance, but I think we all know that relative to major fires, these are relatively small. So what did the first investigation come up with? This was reported in a NOVA video. It's a famous video that keeps showing over and over on the television. Corley and Thornton, again, were the primary commentators. They said essentially that fireproofing easily blew off. It was like a cartoon. Just everything came off. The floors collapsed, and then the columns buckled outward because they weren't laterally supported. The final report actually came out the next month, and the verbiage was a pancake type of collapse of successive floors. But that wasn't enough, for whatever reason. That wasn't enough of an explanation. NIST began drafting their investigation in 2002 June. Again, they're the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Their first meeting, including public comments, and interestingly enough, who were the public? Gene Corley, Richard Tomasetti, Shankar Nair, and other contributors to the official reports. At the time, Gene Corley made a curious comment. Three times he said, "Look at the floor connections." You know, so he really thought at this time it was the floor connections that failed. Okay? Let me give you a heads up, it wasn't the floor connections. This is really interesting. Authors of the FEMA reports eventually became the authors of the NIST reports in many cases. There's Teresa McAllister again and John Gross. The three most important parts of the NIST report are sections 1-5 about temperatures and fires, 1-6 about the explanation for the actual collapse of the towers, 1-7 which covers the World Trade Center 7, which hasn't actually been completed yet. But these people, who were all authors of FEMA reports, ended up being authors of the NIST reports, and that's curious because the explanations are quite different. This one's really amazing. I like this one. This is October 2002. The Silverstein-Weidling report was intended to provide information for the insurance claim that Larry Silverstein was making. Corley and Thornton Tomasetti engineers were involved, of course. The report results were that there was no floor failure of any kind. It was column failure only, which directly contradicts the FEMA report that had just come out 5 to 6 months before, the NOVA video, and most other experts. In my opinion, speculation, the floor failure would have indicated design failure, and the only thing I can think of is that would lead them to only being able to claim one event. Anyway, it's a curious thing. But you have to ask, how did they know, as they said, what happened? Well, we've got so many stories. You know, the first story was the towering inferno, just kind of various experts telling us crazy things. The FEMA report came out saying floor failure. The Silverstein-Weidlinger report came out contradicting that, saying column failure only. NIST's got a report that's kind of a kitchen sink theory. It's what I call the tin rat theory, meaning they'll never read all this. There's a tin rat. I really believe that's what they intended, that they would create this huge report that nobody would be foolish enough, like myself and others, to actually read. But there's a lot in it, so go ahead. Demo wants to stick his head in again here and point out the characteristics of demolition. I believe he got this from David Ray Griffin and Jim Hoffman, but I don't know that they're friends. There are 10 or 11 characteristics of demolition. All of them are supported in the Twin Towers and Building 7 by photographic evidence and eyewitness testimonies. So we get to the report, the big report. This is the part two of the official conspiracy theory. It's 42 sub-reports and 10,000 pages. It's only for the Twin Towers still, so it's growing. Like others, it's focused only on the political story. They never considered anything like demolition. And again, they're largely the same people as FEMA. Question I asked was, did they use the standards, since they're the National Institute of Standards, did they use the standards for fire investigation that we have? There's at least two areas where I know they did not. It's important in Section 6.5 to remember that conflict of interest should be avoided. And NIST used specialists and contractors who were dependent on government contracts or on the official story itself. Section 12.4 says unusual residues could arise from thermite, magnesium, other pyrotechnic materials. And NIST's report, as far as I know, does not mention FEMA's puzzling sulfur residue. Maybe it's a part that I haven't read, but I've gone through a significant part of it. So, our focus today, though, is to look at what they told us about collapse of the buildings and what should have been done to prevent that. So goals 1 and 3 of their 4 goals. And we're going to look at NIST's approach in their final story. They had 5 methods that they told us they used to investigate, and they have essentially 7 steps to their collapse theory. So the 5 investigation methods were A through E, review of documents, interviews with eyewitnesses, analysis of steel, laboratory tests, and finally, computer simulations, which you might find they relied on a little more heavily at the end. So, did they review the most important documents? In my opinion, they did not. Did they review many of the important, relevant design claims that have been reported in the mid-60s when the buildings were first being talked about? No, they did not, as far as I can see. Did they review fire resistance test data? The columns and the floors for tall buildings have to be tested for fire resistance by a company like Underwriters Laboratories. But no, those documents came up missing. And did they review Skilling's fire resistance analysis that he talked about? No, those documents also came up missing. What were the original design claims I'm talking about? The first one's a general one. It says the World Trade Center towers would have an inherent capacity to resist unforeseen calamities. For the perimeter columns, live loads on these columns can be increased more than 2,000% before failure occurs. And finally, they said one could cut away all the first-story columns on one side, that's on the bottom where the load is very heavy, and partway from the corners of the perpendicular sides, and the building could still withstand design live loads and 100-mile-per-hour wind from any direction. That's quite a claim, and we're going to get to that. So were the World Trade Center steel components tested for fire resistance? NIST said they found no documents, but yet they also say in their report that the buildings were rated as Class 1B. They actually say the buildings were designed as Class 1A, but yet finally rated as Class 1B mainly for the sprinkler system. But 1B does have 3 hours of fire resistance for columns and 2 hours for floors. So if they have that rating, certainly they must have some documentation. Underwriters Laboratories, Chief Executive Officer, told me that UL had tested the steels in the New York City Code. This would have been 40 years ago, this testing it would have occurred, before any of us had worked there. And the Port Authority said, there are no test records in our files. Well, if the steel components, the columns, or the floor assemblies had been tested for fire resistance, as they should have, it would have been tested according to a standard called ASTM E119. That standard is where these components or assemblies are placed in a furnace, and that furnace is brought up to high temperature according to a time temperature curve, in this case 2,000 degrees is the target, and as many as 8 hours is used. The way they do it is that for a floor, and we'll see a little bit of the pictures of this, they'll create a furnace underneath the floor where it's fireproofed, and then they'll end the test when the top outside of the furnace has reached a certain temperature. And then if that took 111 minutes, then they'll give the rating of 1.5 hours. If it took 58 minutes, like it did for one of theirs, they give it 3/4 of an hour because it didn't reach 1 hour. Okay?